I'm the program manager for our tobacco cessation initiative with Jefferson Center for Mental Health. And then we also have...
Hi, I'm Peggy Sarcomo. I am a certified tobacco treatment specialist as well as a certified health education specialist working here at Jefferson Center as a peer specialist on the tobacco cessation initiative.
And we want to take a couple quick moments here just to describe Jefferson Center for Mental Health. We are a private, nonprofit community mental health center. We've been around for more than 57 years, and our catchment area includes Jefferson County, Gilpin County, and Clear Creek County. And across those three counties, we actually have over 23 total locations, including we are also in some school-based facilities, primary care centers, and some other co-locations as well. So our services really run the gamut. We've got access and emergency, we've got wellness, we've got navigation services to help consumers navigate their Medicaid benefits, and then other resources in the community. We also have adult outpatient, adult intensive services, and anything from family-related mental health, children, family, and then all the way through senior services as well. And then, too, I also want to mention, we're going to talk about our tobacco cessation program and how we're using health systems change and peer support as the primary models of our program. But I want to also mention that we are not doing this alone. We are funded through the State Tobacco Education Prevention Partnership with CDPHE. So we use quite a bit of assistance and resources through the STEP program. And then we also have assistance from the University of Colorado Behavioral Health and Wellness Program. So just amazing resources, knowledge, and expertise that we're able to partner with from that team. And then, of course, our community collaborations are also really key for the work that we do here. So we work very closely with Jefferson County Public Health as well as Gilpin Public Health and Clear Creek County. And then MCPN as well, the Metro Community Provider Network, is another one of our great partners. In fact, one that we have a lot of co-locations with, just Jefferson Center in general. And then we've been able to collaborate and learn from them quite a bit in terms of the initiatives that they have in place for tobacco cessation. All right, so really five main objectives that we'd like to cover with you all today. We're going to review just kind of some high level about tobacco use in behavioral health populations, as well as our, an overview of what we're doing here, what is our initiative. We hope that you go away from this hour with an understanding of how we're using health system change to increase tobacco cessation and kind of how we're doing that within a community mental health center specifically. We're also going to talk about ways that we identified baseline data for our program, as well as barriers and challenges and things that we're doing to mitigate those things. We'll also have Peggy will speak about our peer support tobacco cessation coaching. And then we'll touch, again, high level on the evidence-based brief tobacco cessation interventions, which two A's and R, and then five A's. I do want to mention, so tobacco use and behavioral health. So you're going to see, we're going to use interchangeably the terms behavioral health and mental health. So there actually is a slight difference. Behavioral health includes, I guess it's a wider umbrella. So it includes mental health. It also includes substance abuse. So you'll see those terms kind of interchangeable today, just in a couple of our slides. So just wanted to kind of mention that on the front end. So starting from the top, so tobacco use in the United States and looking at it, specifically within Colorado, not specific to behavioral health populations, not quite yet. We'll look at that here in a minute. But in Colorado, where the current smoking rate for adults, so I should mention that too, we're looking at data and information specific to adults, 18 and older, at this point, because that is what our program is currently focused on. So in Colorado, 17.6% of the adult population are current smokers. And you know, Colorado ranks 21st among all of the states, anywhere with a range of 9.3% to 26.5% of tobacco use within the U.S. But then when we dive a little deeper into tobacco use within mental health, so we've got that 17.6% of adults that we know in the general population using tobacco, and then we know about 14.4% of Colorado adults report mental health conditions. And then within that 14.4% of those who report mental health, we've got a rate of tobacco use for Colorado adults that do have those mental health conditions of 32.9%. So quite a bit higher than the general population.
The thing about the mental health and behavioral health is it is sometimes treated as a coping mechanism. It appears at a higher rate that these people have been taught to use these tobacco use as a way of coping through their day. I think it's startling that out of that small percentage of behavioral health people that are in the smoking category, they represent such a high level of tobacco sales. They have almost 40% of tobacco sales. And on average, these people are dying 24 to 25 years earlier. So this is something that we want to address. I have heard it said to treat their mental condition without addressing tobacco abuse is kind of like treating someone who's not going to be around to benefit from their mental health progress. So tobacco, how it affects their behavioral health treatment. Some people find it, like I said, as a coping mechanism, and it is true. We do find that it benefits their ability to, you know, the release of dopamine. It calms them. But they also have, the people who use tobacco, they have more psychiatric symptoms. They have increased hospitalization, so we do find that they're suffering not only from their mental health conditions, but they start being admitted into the hospital at higher rates than the average person. And then their medications are also at higher doses due to the liver function and the necessity of the medication to treat them. They'll need higher doses. So when we address this tobacco use within this population, we find that their health care costs are decreasing because they have less hospital admittance, and sometimes their medication can actually be decreased because the liver is no longer filtering out the nicotine that's in their system, and their medications become more effective. So they're actually winning on that area as well with decreased medication. This is another reason why when we have the behavioral health and mental health stop smoking, it is important that they are in contact with their doctor to let them know of their tobacco use status.
So we know that there is good news across the United States that the overall number of general population of smokers is decreasing. So it's at an all-time low right now. But we also know that that's not for everyone. So this is actually a video. I don't trust technology, so I'm not going to play it. But it's a quick 2-minute video, and I've linked it in the slides, and I'd be happy to share these out afterwards so you can kind of get a glimpse of this quick video. But really what it's saying is that there are some priority populations that and not only are they not decreasing tobacco use, but it's actually increasing over time. And there's a lot of factors that relate to that. So the three populations that they speak to in this video are American Indians, the population with mental health issues, and then also the LGBTQ community as well.
And as Marissa mentioned, these our communities are being targeted Our grant is actually paid for from the settlement, which is tobacco was forced to pay for treatment or health education related to tobacco. The sad thing is out of that money, only $1 of that is sent toward prevention, and $18 is spent to advertise future smoking. So they do target our audience highly. When tobacco first was introduced to sanitariums, the tobacco industry actually delivered cartons of cigarettes and convinced the doctors that this was therapeutic for the inmates. And to this day, we're still fighting that concept from some doctors that that it is therapeutic and it's a form of socialization in some areas of treatment as well. So the thing is, our population, they have limited resources. They're facing homelessness and health conditions that they don't have the money to pay for, yet because of their addiction, $5 in their pocket doesn't necessarily mean a meal. It means a pack of cigarettes, and that's one of the reasons that it's very important that we target this population for treatment, because we need to reserve their money for their health care and their basic needs.
Certainly, and this is another place where I do not trust technology for today's webinar, but I have linked a couple of resources there. So one is the Truth campaign, which it's been in existence for a while, but in recent years they've started a campaign awareness around basically this exact piece, like the tobacco industry targeting for those special populations that we just mentioned. And one of the links is it's a quick 20-second video clip of a great little satire of how this is, it truly affects our priority populations. And then the other link at the bottom of the slide is Follow the Signs, and this is a person, her name is LaTanisha Wright, and she actually provides an excellently awesome perspective of the tobacco industry, because she used to work for them. So she has actually since completely changed her position and is now advocating for, especially for special populations, to basically right this terrible wrong. Anyway, very interesting to follow her website and see just some different information that she has out there as well. So I've linked those here for your future knowledge. All right, so kind of moving into what we're doing here at Jefferson Center to focus on tobacco cessation. And I want to take a pause to just talk about why Jefferson Center for Mental Health has such a great opportunity to implement tobacco cessation. So at the very base of the pyramid is of course just our access to the high risk and priority populations. So we service a very high percentage of Medicaid consumers, and then of course we're a mental health center. So a lot of access to people who would need this type of treatment. Jefferson Center also has a focus in prevention and wellness in terms of the services that they offer and the integrated care that we offer. We also specialize in co-occurring treatment for substance abuse disorders. And then, of course, we're experts in behavioral change, being that a large percentage, over 400 of our staff members are licensed mental health clinicians. So we have really unique opportunity to help people with tobacco cessation. So a quick overview of our tobacco cessation initiative. We are working toward two main goals. Our project description is to expand and improve existing tobacco cessation efforts, and then to create a sustainable, comprehensive program that will be able to sustain beyond our grant funding. And so working towards two specific goals. One is to recognize and treat tobacco dependence as a chronic condition, so just as you would treat and monitor diabetes or asthma or any other chronic condition. And then two, to decrease the tobacco use for low socioeconomic status consumers, which again, is a large percentage of our consumers here at Jefferson Center. So our quick snapshot of our program plan. Of course, there's a lot more detail involved, but we, as a program, we have 3 dedicated peer specialist quick coaches. So Peggy is 1 of 3. She's a certified tobacco treatment specialist. And then we are also working towards updating and revising and basically relaunching an electronic health record to include specific components for tobacco. We're modifying workflow, and then we are training our clinical staff. So there are a couple things that we knew on the front end when we began this program. Our funding began, I should say, in July of 2015, and we have been, continuously planning and implementing at the same time here. So we really are still in implementation phase. And I do want to share that just so you all know that this is lessons learned as we go through this. We'll be sharing those as we go. But a couple of things that we knew on the front end that might be kind of a brick wall for us, but hopefully we can climb over it. We're working on that now, is that, you know, persons with behavioral health conditions, we know that they have a tendency to smoke more and for longer periods. We know, as Peggy just mentioned, that there's a history of acceptance and socialization of tobacco use within the mental health treatment community. So that means, you know, doctors, therapists, et cetera, that it's been a norm to accept that tobacco use is just something that the clients do. And then we also know that there's a need for tailored and more intensive treatment. So what I mean by that is that, you know, we need to be able to be available and be flexible to kind of meet our clients where they need to be. We have a lot of consumers that are homeless or they don't have access to a phone, and so the quit line couldn't, you know, the Colorado quit line is not an option for them, and so we need to be flexible and available to give them the treatment that they need. So I will say there is a silver lining. We know that more than 75% of tobacco users with behavioral health conditions report that they do want to quit. So we know that the want and the desire is there, and then that's where we come in to help them with that. Another brick wall that, again, we're working on climbing over is our clinical staff challenges, things like lacking skills, training, time, or confidence related to tobacco cessation. Again, that perception that either their clients have no desire to quit or potentially that their quitting might impair their progress on their other issues. For example, like quitting might impair their sobriety, which we know is actually not true. So working on breaking down that wall so that we can get our clinical staff on board. And then the general comment is that, you know, it's not part of their job. It's not something that, as a busy clinician, that they have time to fit into their work with clients. And so we want to, again, dispel that myth and give them the tools needed to incorporate it into their job. So we did a baseline assessment, which I'll go into a little bit more detail here in a couple of slides, but we learned, this is the silver lining, we learned that Jefferson Center clinical staff, 96% of them who responded to our survey, they do agree or strongly agree that it's important for consumers to receive tobacco cessation service, and they also agree or strongly agree that it's possible. So we look at that as a great opportunity to work with them more and give them some more training. Okay, so I'm going to move into what it is that Jefferson Center is doing related to health systems change. And specifically, we'll talk a little bit about the tobacco cessation workflow model that we are basing our changes on. So I'll make note of a reference here, actually. So with the Behavioral Health and Wellness Program through University of Colorado, they have many excellent resources, but one that was very helpful for us and could be helpful for you all on the phone is their workflow resource for tobacco cessation. It's a toolkit, essentially, and it can be adapted for, you know, mental health facilities. It can be adapted for primary care. It can even be adapted for, like, you know, dentist offices or community, like public health type of offices as well. So it's very, very flexible. So what we're, you know, the foundation of our workflow is, again, working toward one of our goals to treat tobacco dependence as a chronic condition. So we are changing our systems to ensure that tobacco dependence gets that same type of consistent and ongoing monitoring as it would be for, you know, someone with diabetes or someone, like I said, with asthma, any of those types of chronic conditions. And within the workflow, we are making efforts, right, we're in implementation phase, but we are making our efforts to include that treatment is offered regardless of, you know, if someone is a tobacco user, treatment is offered to them or they are referred to services irregardless of their readiness or motivational stage. So, again, we'll go into a little bit more on that piece in terms of the importance of asking, advising to quit, and then referring to treatment at every interaction. And then, of course, as with any other, you know, chronic condition, the client is free to decline or opt out of the treatment or intervention that's offered to them, but we want to ensure, again, with every interaction that they are being offered that treatment. So we did some analysis of our current workflow and as also our current roles within the center. So this is extremely summarized, I'll say that. So this slide is very summarized in terms of the different roles that we do have in our center. So with over 700 total staff, we've got a lot of people and a lot of different roles and responsibilities, but essentially we broke it down to these key pieces and responsibilities for how they can be involved in tobacco cessation. So from our leadership standpoint, so you know, our medical director, our executive board, we're looking to them, of course, for support for permanent change and sustainability to include tobacco cessation. And then also empowerment and approval of necessary changes. So thankfully so far we've not encountered too many roadblocks, which I think is a positive for Jefferson Center in the standpoint of leadership. We also have identified, and this is again from our general analysis, the importance to have either a champion or a dedicated manager or coordinator to lead the initiative. So someone, I've got passion up there as the very top piece, because you know, without a passion to really want to infiltrate your system or your clinic with tobacco cessation, then you know, there's a fear of falling short. So definitely a passion to really implement something successful. Necessary to assess the readiness of the organization to adapt to change. So we've actually identified some things that are going to be a little bit slower going, and I'll talk about that here in a second. But really just assessing what are our quick wins, what are things that are going to take a little bit longer, and then what are things that we might need to table for maybe 3 years from now. So, and then coordination of training. So I've talked about clinical staff training. This person really has to be on board to do that. Ensure documentation, really lead the charge in any changes that need to be made to the electronic health record. And then, of course, supervision of the in-house tobacco cessation services. If the clinic or the center is lucky enough to have that type of service, which we, of course, are with our three dedicated coaches. And then clinical and nursing staff. So this is our widest bucket, I would say. This actually fits a lot of different people in here. So we've got, you know, our licensed therapists. We've got our peer specialists from, you know, like our adult intensive peer specialists. We've got our nursing staff being medical assistants or actual nurses, you know, the big bucket of people that fit into here. But really what we've identified as their role within tobacco is to do that screening and brief intervention. You know, less than 3 minutes is really what we're asking them. And then refer out to appropriate tobacco cessation services and document those interventions in the electronic health record. So trying to keep their responsibility as simple as possible, but of course as effective as possible as well. And then our peer specialist coach team, that is the team of three dedicated coaches that we have, and they are, we'll talk more about what their specific role is here in a minute, but they're obviously very key to our workflow. And then our prescribing providers. We we are, again, I'm going to say Jefferson Center is lucky to have some very supportive prescribing providers on our staff. And they, you know, really what we look to them for is to offer that advice to quit and referral. So, you know, if they work with a client that is a tobacco user, they can spend 1 minute to even just advise them about, you know, the benefits of quitting and then send them on to a coach or the quit line and potentially help them or help them with a prescription of NRT through the Medicaid benefits. And then the front desk and admin as well is a key piece you can see there of really just having the general understanding so that the message is clear from every in any way that a consumer would be touched at our center. They would have that same message of, you know, if you're a tobacco user, we want to help you quit. So Jefferson Center's focus strategy, this is really where we've kind of bucketed where our focus is. And first and foremost, the center went tobacco-free. All of the buildings, grounds, and parking lots are tobacco-free according to our organizational policy. And that actually was implemented before the program. It was implemented back in 2010. So now our job is really to continue that message and to continue the adherence, not only for our consumers, but also for our staff. That is certainly something to consider. We do have staff that smoke. We focus a lot on our stakeholder involvement, which I've mentioned a little bit. You know, one is our leadership here at Jefferson Center. Also, our various community partners are extremely important to keep them on board and help in the planning process and the implementation. And then we've also established a tobacco work group within the center. And this is made up of, really it's made up of all kinds of representation from the center. Again, we have so many different services and so many different locations that we wanted to bring in essentially champions from all different parts of the center. So we have our medical director actually sits on the work group, and we have adult outpatient clinician, we have peer specialists, we even have people from our marketing team as well, again, just to get a really well-rounded viewpoint and also have some action from kind of on the ground with assistance in our efforts. So we are focusing on revising workflow and then also making specific changes to our electronic health record. We've implemented already a referral process to our in-house tobacco cessation service, and then also, of course, follow up on that as well, because we do know that tobacco use is a relapsing chronic condition, just to make it that much more difficult. So we do have a process in place for the referral, but then also, you know, continuous follow up. And then we're working very much, especially this year, on clinical staff training in order to really, you know, roll this out and have success and buy-in from all of our clinical staff. So I'll share a little bit about the baseline assessment that we did. Again, this was really to collect baseline data, of course, and then also to identify, you know, what would be the resistance to change? You know, what are the things that might be challenges or barriers that we're going to need to be creative with? So we did really four main parts to collect our baseline data. One, we launched a knowledge, behaviors, and attitudes survey that went out to all of our clinical staff back in November and December 2015. And we had about, so I'll show you here in a second the results. We had about 30% response rate, which not too bad, still gave us a good baseline. We also, of course, have the tobacco prevention work group that is kind of our ongoing, almost like an ongoing focus group, extremely helpful for the perspectives that we don't see or we don't have, you know, access to. We also did interviews with some different key stakeholders. So, for example, a prescribing provider, one of our existing peer specialists, an adult outpatient clinician. We wanted to kind of gather what and how are they currently talking about tobacco, if at all, so that we had a baseline of kind of that workflow. And then we also went to our electronic health record as well to pull specific information. So we'll look at that data here in a second. And the bottom of this slide, I'll tell you now, this is not scientific. So this is just our assessment of kind of what we have, what's on our side. So with resistance to change, we kind of found ourselves middle of the road in terms of resistance to change being a barrier, where really there's some very key populations or key service groups within Jefferson Center that are more resistant than others. So middle of the road there in terms of our challenge. Lack of knowledge is probably our greatest learn, our greatest opportunity, in that we learn that people just need some more knowledge about how to do this and how to do it efficiently. And then lack of support, we're good on support. I think we really, really have just an awesome team here that cares about this and is willing to work with us on improving tobacco cessation. So lack of support, just a few maybe very specific populations or clinical teams that we have some challenge with. So high level, what we learned, again, I said about 30% of our total clinical staff responded, and 74% told us that they have a primary or secondary role in talking about tobacco cessation. And that's exactly who we want to talk to, because anyone who is either that's their frontline job description or, it's something that they feel that they should be talking about. 40% told us that they had no formal training, so that was kind of a red flag for us in terms of putting together some more formal training for our clinical staff. And then 32% said that tobacco cessation specifically, either the opportunities were inadequate or just too rare for them. So some learning there. In the bottom left of the slide, this is where we looked at our electronic health record, and a couple of things here. So we found, so there's two main places within the electronic health record currently where tobacco use would be documented for a consumer. And we looked at both of those places, and we've only came up with 9,479 total documented unique users. Now, Peggy and I are looking at each other in the room because we would assume we don't know for sure, but we would assume that that is pretty underreported, as we see almost 29,000 total clients for services in a year's time. So there's that. So we found that as a baseline number of just that's who we know for sure is documented as a tobacco user, and of those people, only 287 clients had a documented diagnosis of tobacco use disorder. So that means that it was not diagnosed, not diagnosed and then not added to their treatment plan, so not something that's being focused on. So big opportunity for us there. We also learned that among those people that are tobacco users, so that 9,000 number, only 25% were we able to identify that they actually had their readiness assessed, so readiness to quit. And then only 13% were provided information about quitting or quit help or services. We also asked about the brief interventions for tobacco cessation, and one of them is the ask, advise, refer, which is really what we'd like most of our clinical staff to adopt. And 59% said they didn't have any knowledge of it really, or very little. And then, 71% said they had none or little knowledge of the 5A's, which is another one of the evidence-based models that we really love to have our clinical staff trained and using. So again, great opportunity there for some training. I'm mentioning this, the screenshots are not meant to be read. So if you find it small, I apologize, but really I just wanted to show you quickly a very high level of what we are working on now to improve the way that we document tobacco use in our electronic health record. So this is not in place currently. This is actually an old draft as well. So we've made even some more updates in terms of the functionality. But Jefferson Center as a whole is actually upgrading our EHR in October of 2016. And so with that, we will also have the opportunity to make quite a bit of improvements and modifications to the tobacco use piece. And so this form is one of those pieces. So It's following the evidence-based models. We've got actually the 5 A's and 2 A's and R are included in this form. And really, the required components are just the ask, so finding out if someone is a tobacco user. The advise piece, so having that brief conversation about with a clear, strong personal message that, you know, quitting tobacco is the best thing that you can do for your health. And then we're also asking them to assess readiness. So, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you to quit tobacco right now? Because that really helps the clinician, whoever is doing this really brief assessment, to gauge the right type of referrals to give them. So the ask, advise, assess, and then the referral. So ideally, we are trying to get our clinical staff to refer any and every tobacco user to our in-house coaching program. And then, of course, also to the Colorado Quit Line and potentially some other additional resources out there in the community. Another thing we're building into our form is a page widget of basically a link to the Quit Line e-referral form, trying to make the Quit Line referral easier for all of our providers and clinicians to be able to just open that up, type in the client's information and send it off to QuitLine. And then also a link to our Tobacco Cessation resource page for additional self-help materials. So should that be a need for the client, there would be a link right there to for the clinician to go and pull down some information that could be helpful for them. So a lot of functionality is still in the works, I will say. So some of the things that we've asked for and we're really, really hoping is built in our system is to include this form in all of the intakes and then basically easily accessible for every clinician kind of on their face sheet within the electronic health record so that any visit that they have with a client, they can easily click to open this form, go through those four required questions, and have it documented. And then we're also working on getting this form specifically built into the vital signs for any prescribing provider appointment as well. And then third thing I'll just mention too, we are it will happen. They're building in a reminder. So one of those from the data that we saw that not a lot of people are being diagnosed with tobacco use disorder. So if at any time someone is identified and recorded as a current tobacco user, a reminder would pop up for the clinician to add that diagnosis to their treatment plan. So we're excited about that because really the tobacco use disorder was just added in 2015, I believe, April of 2015. And so it's a learning curve for a lot of clinicians here. And then, of course, with our initiative focusing on tobacco cessation, we're really trying to make that easier for people to include in clients' treatment plans. All right. And I'm going to let Peggy share now about our coaching program.
In dealing with tobacco, first of all, the reason we're using peer specialists is we feel that it's an understanding that if you've been there, you've done that, you can become a teacher. So it is being able to connect and identify with the person who is struggling. But we do know tobacco is not just a physical addiction. It is actually as well as a behavioral condition. So in treating that, we do need to hit on both of those components. The physical addiction, of course, we can address through nicotine replacement therapy, which the seven areas of nicotine replacement therapy can be given them for withdrawal or a nicotine delivery system other than the combustible smoke, as well as hitting the behavioral aspects, which is teaching them how to do something different. I tell my clients a lot of times, you don't have to do anything, but you just have to change everything because the way you live your life is no longer going to work because when you take tobacco out of that daily behavior, it becomes quite a journey. And we have to address both of those things at the same time. So the counseling and medication has been proven to be the best practices. A nicotine replacement therapy, either one or a combination of two, as well as the minimum of 4 counseling sessions. That's best practices for treating tobacco. We find that one by itself can be effective, but the two in combination have proven to be more effective. The client can obviously go buy the nicotine replacement therapy on their own in the grocery store and try the journey on themselves. But having a coach that you can help formulate a plan for you, talk about what's going to happen and how to cope with what is happening, we find is most beneficial to that person and their quit attempt. The peer support coaching is something that's widely used at Jefferson Center. It's someone who identifies with the condition and has learned to cope with it or live with it. The tobacco quit coach, it is someone also who has been trained in tobacco cessation. And we are very high in outreach, which is the ability to call the client and offer them to just come in and talk to us and talk about what their quitting looks like. And you can imagine that phone call is sometimes quite interesting. The phone doesn't get answered a lot, but when they do and they're willing to talk about it, it is an open door to the beginning of their journey. The one-on-one for our population, one-on-one works a little more than group support because some of them are suffering with mental health conditions or living with mental health conditions, I should say. They like to not share that in groups. Group support has been huge to open up into the community. However, though, there are those individuals that do better in group. I personally am a strong believer in group. I believe there's strength in numbers, and they can learn from one another as well instead of having the benefit of just one single coach. We also use the quit line quite frequently. If that's just an awesome benefit for someone, I think that that's been one of the most beneficial things for tobacco cessation ever is the quit line, because no matter where you are, you can call that 1-800-QUIT-NOW and get support and help with the nicotine replacement therapy as well. The referral process, this is something that is in work, and I do find personally that the person that comes to me through a referral is much at a much higher readiness than one that we do the outreach call to. The clinical staff, we're asking them to send us a referral of someone who they have asked, are you still smoking or are you smoking, and would you like some information on that? That's basically all they need to say. And then they can refer out that client to us to kind of pick them up at that stage. There's also the clinical staff, which are the care coordinators or the clinicians, who are working with the clients on other areas. And tobacco maybe not is one of the highest priorities on their list, and that's someone they can refer out to a quit coach, and we can dedicate our time to that. We, at that point, can take the client and schedule one-on-one sessions. We're also not limited to our sessions. I can see someone twice a week or 3 times a week or once a month, whatever we feel like their need is. We can also stay closely connected with that person because that is our primary job and do extensive follow-up. We can let the person that referred out that client stay in the loop with our, we document in our electronic health records the status, as well as email communication, letting them know if the client is still working with us on one-on-one or in group, or what that status is. So it really does take a lot of pressure off of the clinical staff for this treatment to have the peer specialist kind of take over that role.
Absolutely. Thank you, Peggy. And this is one thing to note, too, is that this process is what we currently have in place, given that we've not yet launched some of our systems changes related to our electronic health record. So as we continue to implement and as our EHR gets launched in the fall of 2016, this process will become more and more refined and hopefully more and more efficient as well. Not that it isn't already. It's working pretty well, at least. At least we think so. So we're excited about it. So we also have a protocol that actually just put into place related to the nicotine replacement or cessation medications for our consumers. So the Colorado Medicaid Tobacco Cessation Benefit basically allows for very reduced costs, so like a $3 copay for NRT if a prescription and prior authorization is completed. So, and you can actually, on that benefit, you can receive up to 2 90-day courses of treatment of NRT or cessation med, so of any of the 7 FDA-approved versions. So with that, we identified a need to help our prescribers get on board with this because, of course, you know, tobacco cessation is not their main priority as they work with consumers for so many things. And so essentially what we've done is created a quick protocol that includes standing orders for NRT. Right now the standing orders are for the patch and the gum. So we're looking right now to expand that to have standing orders to also include, you know, the lozenge and the nasal spray and the inhaler as well. But basically, qualifying for the Medicaid benefit, consumer also has to be engaged in coaching. And so our coach will meet with a consumer for that first assessment, kind of gauge how ready they are to quit, and then, of course, also if they're interested in NRT. And from there, the coach will email our nursing staff. So truly, it's really the medical assistants who are our front line of communication with this protocol. They will review what we've established as the, you know, not we've established, but we've educated them on for physical history and contraindications for any of the NRT. And then with the standing order in place, it's pretty awesome. All the prescriber really needs to do is just be notified that that the client has a good option for NRT. And then we can get that script written and complete the prior authorization as well. So the medical assistant is looped in on that process too. So we've had very great success so far. We've assisted 35 consumers. We rolled this out middle of February, and we've assisted 35 consumers with obtaining a script for their NRT. And then we also do include the quitline benefit. That is another way that we absolutely will help our consumers get some NRT at free, no cost, of course, with the quitline benefit. So a couple different ways that we're working on that for our consumers. Okay, so I will go quickly through this because I see we are coming up on our hour of time, but really I just wanted to share, we both wanted to share a high level of the brief tobacco cessation interventions. So we know that advice can improve chances of quitting. So this is a graph that shows you that, you know, 1.7 to 2.2 times as likely to successfully quit a client could be if they are just advised to quit from an interaction with either their therapist or their provider. So another thing to think about too is even just 3 minutes or even less than 3 minutes. I mean, there you can get a script down to like 8 seconds truly to ask, advise, and then refer to a resource. So, and the odds of quitting increase, of course, with the more time that you spend in an intervention with an individual. But just seeing this, I mean, even just 3 minutes or less can increase the odds by 30% that person will then go attempt to quit. So we really, pairing this information with our goal of treating tobacco dependence as a chronic condition, I mean, it just makes perfect sense that Jefferson Center is incorporating this into our treatment for our clients. So the main way that we're working on our clinical staff training is just to really talk about ask, advise, refer, and really help them be skilled in this quick interaction. So the referral, ideally for our consumers here at Jefferson Center, is to get them to a quick coach because the quick coach is the person who can really spend more time, right? 10, 20, 30 minutes in a session, sometimes an hour, depending on the consumer, but
can really spend that time that's needed to help them. Then if there is a different resource that might be better for them, the Quick Coach can get them to that other resource, or you know, help them create a custom quit plan, or just be there for support as they work through quitting. So this is a sample script that, again, we've tailored for our clinical staff here at Jefferson Center, truly anyone here. And it's down, I mean, if you ran through this and you had a consumer who was engaged in your conversation, you could probably get this done in a minute. It's really just to ask, have you ever used any form of tobacco products? Of course, making that documentation in the EHR. Personalizing the message to advise that, you know, Jefferson Center is here to help them quit. They can quit. It is possible. We have some help if they want it. And then, of course, to personalize to, you know, if you know the consumer, personalize that, you know, something in their life could be greatly benefited from quitting tobacco. So really try to personalize that message. And then refer. So, and the referral should happen. This is, I think, a common mistake or misconception with people is that the referral happens regardless, right? The referral, if they're ready and they do want to take some action to quit, then you know you can definitely share either a soft handoff to a quit coach or call the quit line with them, you know, so that they can get it done right then and there. But if they're not ready and they are not interested in quitting right now or taking any action quite yet, there's still a referral that can happen. You can still absolutely share information about, you know, what's available to them. Of course, not pushing it, but just letting them know. Again, there are definitely free available resources out there when they're ready, if they want to contact to let them know that's available. And then the 3 to 10 minute, the 5 A's is the 3 to 10 minute model, which is really just adding in some additional motivational interviewing into the assessment and the assistance phase. This is one that, of course, our quit coaches are using this model in their in-depth quit coaching sessions. But we also want our clinical staff to be aware of this as well. So if it is if an opportunity presents itself that they can go into a little bit more depth or they have a little bit more time, we certainly want to be arming our clinical staff with this model as well. And I've linked there the toolkit, the tobacco-free toolkit from the Behavioral Health and Wellness Program. Again, just a wealth of information and great additional resources for anyone who might be interested in learning more about either of these two models. And then I would be remiss if I didn't share some additional referrals out there in our community as well. So, I mean, of course, the Colorado Quit Line is an excellent free benefit and resource available to anyone 15 and older to actually call and use the telephonic coaching. And then the free NRT is up to 8 weeks of free NRT is available for callers 18 and older who do not have a private insurance benefit, I should say that, and then also don't have any other specific contraindications, like they're not pregnant or anything like that. So that is also definitely available, and we use that very, very much. And then Baby and Me Tobacco Free, so our tobacco treatment specialists are not specialized in working with pregnant women, so we certainly want to refer out to those that are and those that are experts in that. We'll also refer out to other community tobacco cessation groups if our Jefferson Center groups don't fit for the needs of consumers. Mobile quit apps, smoke-free text, Nicotine Anonymous, I mean, these are all free available resources out there. And then our Jefferson Center wellness classes too, just to kind of really focus in on the fact that, you know, it's the whole person. We're wanting them to help, you know, wanting to help them quit tobacco, but then what else? What's next? And how do they continue to live healthy? I mentioned too that Jefferson Center, we're going to wrap up here in about 2 minutes, but I mentioned that we are tobacco free, and so we do have some specific initiatives in place to continue that message. So we've got some separate lines of messaging and communication that go to our consumers and then also to our staff. I mentioned that as well, where we really do care about helping our staff quit as well. Our program doesn't specifically focus on that, but we certainly do our best to communicate what is available to staff that may be smoking. So quick, just a snapshot of some program stats. So we started in July of 2015, but really haven't been a fully staffed team until just recently in March, actually. So you'll notice that we're collecting stats and continuing to grow the program as we go and as we continue to implement. But what's exciting is to see that as we've made our services more and more available, and we do have three dedicated coaches now, our outreach to potential consumers that may join our program is just through the roof, which is great. And then we're seeing more and more consumers for coaching. We saw in just quarter three, or just January through March, we saw 77 unique clients for coaching, which is really exciting. And we had 20 clients quit and 5 who've reduced in a specific plan to eventually quit. So next steps, we are working, of course, to get our clinical staff training rolled out to finish those electronic health record updates to really modify and get our workflow approved. And then obviously continuing to just reassess and evaluate as we go so that we make this program as effective as we can. And that's actually, so I do have some slides in here that show a sample script of the 5 A's, but really that's it. So I know we're right at time. I'd be happy to take any questions if there are any, but if you need to leave, go for it. Hop off the call. But thank you so much for joining, anyone who did. And we look forward to having you back for our next webinar in May.